Good morning, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order 2 minutes after 9 a.m., April 8th, 2022. With me today is Co-Chair Senator Bishop, Senator Wilson, Senator Hoffman, Senator Wilkowski. And we have probably will be joined later on by Senator von Imhoff. Today we're going to have public testimony dealing with Senate Bill 162, which is the FY23 operating budget, which will begin the 1st of July. We're also going to take testimony on SB 163, which is the mental health budget for FY23, and also the capital budget, Senate Bill 164 for FY23. We have all three of those on. That makes it easier, I think, for the public, and they can testify on any or all of those. I'd like to remind everybody to be respectful of the time limit, as there's other Alaskans that want to have their 2 cents in on the discussion here today, and I'll be running a timer. Also, please keep your comments focused on the budget, the issues at hand, which are the operating budget, mental health budget, and the capital budget, please. And the limit's about 2 minutes per person. Please start by introducing yourself, who you are and what town you're at or who you represent, and then speak to the bill. And we're going to start this morning with Southeast, Prince William Sound, and Kodiak. And you can sign up until 10 a.m. That will be the cutoff time, or slightly thereafter. We have to be on the floor of the Senate to deal with legislation at 10:30 this morning. So we're going to go ahead and start, but before we do that, at 1 o'clock, we'll be back, and we're going to pick up areas around the state, the Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage Bowl area, Matsusitna Valley, and extended area. That'll be at 1 o'clock. So we're going to start. We'll go right down the list. We're going to start with the LIOs. We're going to go to Ketchikan. Cynthia Gabateo, and you'll probably have to pronounce your name correctly for your senator, and then go ahead and put your testimony on your record, please.
Good morning. My name is Cynthia Gabateo. I'm the Assistant Borough Manager and Finance Director for the Ketchikan Gateway Borough. I'm calling first to encourage an increase in the BSA and full funding of the school bond debt reimbursement program. To hang on the last couple of years, the borough has had to cut all discretionary spending. We cut current capital projects, and we deferred any new ones and left vacant positions unfilled. So our community is not looking for a handout. 100% of our area-wide property tax is for education, plus we have a half-cent sales tax to support capital needs at the schools. We're just asking the state to be a stronger partner and help us with the ever-increasing cost of education. Our district is at the point now that they're soon going to be faced with having to cut programs, and we really would like to avoid that. Second, we have been taking advantage of every opportunity offered by the infrastructure funding, but it appears that two of our areas of urgent need seem to be overlooked. That would be education and roads, but specifically the kind of roads that would help our housing situation, like the road into Mud Bight. Mud Bight is a half-complete subdivision with many lots in private ownership, but that are inaccessible to the property owners. Just getting access, a road into those lots, would spur housing development, and the borough is already examining other projects that we have the capacity or the ability to get funding for. But those are two areas that seem to just fall between the cracks. Thank you very much for your time this morning, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next on the list, also at the LIO, is Lacey Simpson, City of Ketchikan.
Good morning, Senator. Yes, this is Lacey Simpson, Assistant City Manager for the City of Ketchikan. Like Senna, I wanted to talk a bit about the city's needs in the wake of the pandemic. The city has been greatly impacted financially by the pandemic. As the owner and operator of the Port of Ketchikan, most of the commerce within the area occurs within city limits, and our sales tax revenues have been deeply impacted by 2 years without cruise revenues. I wanted to draw your attention to just a couple of projects that are currently in CAPSIS. projects that have been deferred, projects for failing infrastructure. We have the Schoenbar Culvert rehabilitation. We have received $1.25 million from congressionally directed spending through Congressman Young's office, but another $1.25 million is needed for this critical project as the culvert is failing. And should it completely fail, it poses major environmental impacts to the area, including utilities, nearby schools, ball fields, and so on. We also have the Schoenbar Raw Water Transmission Main Replacement Project. We've been able to secure state revolving fund loans for this project. But likewise, Sina just stated, we would really enjoy the opportunity to talk more about other opportunities there, be it grants, not necessarily handouts, but matching funds, rather than continued loans and increased debt for the city of Ketchikan. We also have Water Street Sewer Force Main and Gravity Main rehabilitation projects at another $4 million. This infrastructure is ending its useful life. It poses extreme environmental risk because it is in a tidally influenced area. So, again, many, many deferred capital projects for the city of Ketchikan in the wake of the pandemic, and appreciate all of your time and attention as you work through this year's budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Let's see. We're going to jump to Wrangell. Carol Rushmore.
Good morning, Senator Stedman and committee. Thank you very much for this opportunity. I'm Carol Rushmore and serve as the Economic Development Director for the City and Borough of Wrangell. I have several critical issues I wanted to talk about. Our number one priority project is the construction of a new water plant, which is critically necessary to complete due to the escalation maintenance costs and the fact that we often exceed EPA water quality standards. It's basically a $15.4 million project, and we put together, through all this infrastructure funding, a grant and loan funding package of over $11 million, including over $1 million from the borough itself. But we still have a $4.3 million shortfall to seeing this project completed. Any assistance available from the state would be critical to us being able to see this project completed. Another more recent issue that I wanted to discuss is the 301H waiver mandates for wastewater discharge. If DEC does impose these new wastewater discharge mandates for completion in the short time frame proposed, funding assistance with more than low interest loans is going to be needed to help our community and probably others to meet these mandates. It's a huge capital expense for us, required in a very short turnaround time that we may not be able to meet, and that's going to place enormous burden on the wastewater fund's ability to maintain the overall system, as well as on our residents to fund the unexpected expense. We really welcome any sort of partnership arrangement with the state on this issue. And then Wrangell also fully supports an increase in the funding of the community jails program to alleviate the burden of operational expenses. Thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. We're going to go jump now to Cordova. And in Cordova, Kathy Reinfeld.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Kathy Reinfeld. I'm testifying in strong support of the City of Cordova's request to the state of Alaska to commit an additional $7.5 million to the harbor rebuild. I'm testifying on behalf of the Cordova Chamber of Commerce. We represent the business community of Cordova, and that is almost completely revolving around the fishing industry in this town. This infrastructure is critical to the continued success of the fishery in Cordova, which gives over $1 million to the statewide economy. Not only is the harbor rebuild necessary to create more room for more vessels to safely moor, the harbor is deteriorating. It's far past its lifespan, 10 years past its lifespan. And we also need this not just for the fishing industry, which is our main economic driver, but also for our burgeoning mariculture industry, for charter operators who are hoping to offer recreational tourism. And it also creates greater access for subsistence users, which enhances quality of life here. It provides needed safety as an oil spill response port, and also for electrical safety and ADA upgrades. And there's also environmental benefits of getting those creosote pilings out and replacing them and doing other enhancements. We really need this harbor rebuild to happen. We have a lot of money already committed to it. The voters of Cordova have supported it with $7 million in voter-approved taxes. The city was awarded a $20 million competitive grant and a $5 million Tier 1 grant. It's shovel-ready. It's only having this $7.5 million shortfall because of COVID-related inflation. I believe that this is just a no-brainer for the Senate Finance Committee to approve this allotment to the City of Cordova for its harbor renovation. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Nancy Bird in Cordova, please.
Good morning. I'm Nancy Bird, a current small boat user, former salmon seiner, and a 45-year resident of Cordova. I'm here primarily to ask for your support of the City of Cordova's FY23 capital request for $7.5 million to rebuild our South Harbor, what used to be widely known as the New Harbor, but is now extremely dilapidated and unsafe. Many have worked for years to secure funds for this rebuild. Unfortunately, their success is now challenged by COVID-19 pandemic price increases, raising the project cost. Cordova's harbor fuels our local economy, and no one who lives or works here is not touched by it. Please support Cordova's capital request of $7.5 million so that our harbor's rebuild can proceed without delay. The investment will have long-standing impact on Cordova's economy. Turning to the operating budget, I want to express support for most of the $7 billion budget. I urge you to oppose, however, the House's amendment regarding state Medicaid funds used for abortions. I support all medical decisions being made between a patient and his or her medical provider. I also support payment now of the outstanding debt to oil and gas drillers and urge forward funding for both education and our marine highway. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Now we're going to go out to Kodiak, hear from the mayor, Pat Branson, and the fire hall.
Good morning, co-chairs of the Senate Finance Committee and committee members. I'm Pat Branson, the mayor of the city of Kodiak, and I'm speaking about Senate Bill 164. The city of Kodiak's fire station was constructed in the 1940s with additions made in the 60s and 70s, and is situated in a tsunami inundation zone, and it has outlived its useful life. The building's structural integrity poses a significant risk of failure in a seismic event, as made evident by three large earthquakes in 2016, 2018, and the 2021 8.2 earthquake, making the aging building even more vulnerable. Renovation of the structure to the house, the firehouse for fire and EMS personnel, fire and rescue apparatus, three ambulances, specialty equipment, and medical supplies that support the entire Kodiak area is not a viable alternative. The city has selected a new fire station site out of the inundation zone, solicited design proposals, and selected Wolf Architecture as the design firm. The council approved the city manager to enter into a professional services agreement with Wolf Architecture to complete a 35% design of the new station. The cost of a new fire station is estimated at $23 million. As requested by the late Representative Don Young, $7 million was included in the recent House Agriculture Appropriations Bill, and the city has invested $1.3 million in this project for design costs. The City of Kodiak requests state financial assistance in the amount of $15 million for the new fire station project. Thank you for the opportunity to speak about this important capital project.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Next up, Tom Bryce, Juno.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the Finance Committee. My name is Tom Bryce. I'm here in Juno. And I would like to express my support for a couple of the initiatives that are moving through the House operating budget for the university, namely the critical mineral initiatives, the mariculture initiatives, as well as the healthcare initiatives that are being considered. I'd also like to support the university or addressing the university's deferred maintenance needs, as well as an appropriation for the Anchorage Port project. I know you guys are up to your ears in alligators. Keep up the good work, folks, and thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Next up, Sitka, Tony Jackson.
Yeah.
Tony Jackson, if you could put yourself on the record, please.
Yeah, my name is Tony Jackson, Sitka, Alaska. I'm a care provider for my wife who's basically what I'm talking about is 162, and I'm trying to get funding for SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living. I want to talk to SAIL's done some tremendous things for us over the years. You know, they've provided my wife with a power chair to help her get back and forth at work, kept her working for years past normal and stuff. Then after that, they helped go out and get grants for us to get a chair rail systems to get my wife up and down the stairs and keep her living at home. They've also got a loan closet where we've actually got a sit-to-stand lift, which would help a person get out of a wheelchair and into a normal chair and stuff, move around the house and stuff. And one thing they've done is they've gone out with their money and actually done some grant writing that's helped us out so you get more bang for your buck supporting them and stuff. And all, you know, and this is the wonderful thing that keeps an old person living at home, which is actually the safest environment you can put them in, is keeping them in their own house if they have a care provider and stuff. And I just want to tell you that supporting them, which helps support all these people, you know, with disabilities, is just a fantastic thing to do for us and stuff. So appreciate you listening to me. Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you for your testimony, Tony. Now we'll go back to Cordova. Ken Jones.
Hello. Thank you, co-chairs. My name is Ken Jones. I'm a commercial fisherman and business owner down here in Cordova. And I'm just calling today to urge you to support the additional $7.5 million on the FY23 budget for the Cordova South Harbor replacement project. This project has been 10 years in the making, and we finally got all the funding in place and then the record inflation we've seen. It's definitely a huge, huge project, and it's very much needed in our community. As you've heard from others already about the project, it's going to help many in the community, not just the fishermen, but also the mariculture industry, the sports charter industry, and just the recreational subsistence fishermen as well. So, please support that, and thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Up from Cordova, Rowena Palomar from Valdez, please.
Good morning. I am Rowena Palomar, representing Advocates for Victims of Violence. Our agency is the only organization offering services, providing crisis intervention, emergency shelter, advocacy, prevention, and community education to a region of over 1,000 square miles, with the office and shelter located in Valdez. Valdez and the communities that we serve are 257-mile strip east of Palmer and 364 miles south of Fairbanks, where the next shelters are located. Our emergency shelter is available to support victims and survivors 24/7. Our shelter is at full capacity at all times. In FY23, costs will be rising due to the increasing cost of utilities, particularly fuel and heating bills. During the winter times, Valdez gets 10 times more snow and gets colder than other communities in the state. We anticipate an increase of 15% in this cost. I am not sure how we can absorb that. The House Finance Committee added $500,000 to the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assaults budget to help pay for this cost without having to reduce services. Reducing services does not sound bad until you realize that there will be victims and survivors that will not get to safety and have no safe place to stay. Real consequences of having to choose between helping and keeping emergency shelters fully operation or restricting the numbers of people to be served. I believe that each of you support victims' safety, and thank you for that concern. Please continue to support emergency shelters through the Department of Public Safety's Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault for FY23. Thank you for this opportunity.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Up in Cordova, Nat Taylor, Chief of Police.
Yes, this is Nate Taylor. I'm the Chief of Police here in Cordova, Alaska, and I'm calling in to testify to the operating budget, specifically the operating budget for community jails and the $4 million that was recommended by the State House Finance Committee. A $4 million budget would not 100% cover our cost of operating our community jails, but it would get us close. Obviously, several years ago, that budget was reduced, and in that time, the city has had to shoulder some of the cost of our community jail. An increase to $4 million would allow us to strengthen and improve our community jail program. Additionally, our population here of our jail is almost exclusively pretrial detainees, which are on release through electronic monitoring services. And while the state does pay for the electronic monitoring services, the current operating budget does not fully cover the cost of our staff to monitor those services and our officers to monitor those people on the streets. So I would like to thank you all for the time, and thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Well, now we'll go up to Kenai, Maggie Winston.
Hi, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, please put yourself on the record.
Hi, this is Maggie Winston, and I live in Kenai.
Okay, start your testimony.
Hi, okay. I would like to thank the Senate for your hard work on the operating budget and specifically for your support of the increase to the Senior and Disability Services Home and Community-Based Grants line in the budget. I'm thankful you recognize the challenges that 10 years of flat funding has brought. I acquired spinal cord injury in 2005. I have no functional use of my arms or my legs, and I drive a large power wheelchair with my chin. So I utilize home and community-based services to live, work, and play. I work at a Center for Independent Living, the Independent Living Center down here in Kenai, which centers were created by and for people with disabilities. However, long before I was an employee, ILC assisted me with impactful services like wheelchair-accessible transportation, accessible recreation, peer support, and advocacy. Centers provide services to people and families with disabilities across the state. ILC has offices in Soldotna, Homer, Seward, and Kodiak, and assist individuals to live in their homes, saving the state of Alaska millions of Medicaid dollars. With this increment, our four Centers for Independent Living on the peninsula would get an additional $586,000 to assist individuals with disabilities. So once again, I just want to thank the committee for recognizing the issue of 10 years of flat funding for centers by supporting this increment, and I look forward to your continued support on this important issue. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Now we'll go to Kodiak, Roxanne Murray.
Murphy. Good morning. Good morning. My name is Roxanne Murphy. I'm the Kodiak Island Borough Manager, and I just wanted to express that our borough is interested in community access fund, community assistance fund restoration and increases to support our villages, school bond debt reimbursement full funding and paying back gaps, forward funding K through 12 and addressing school construction and the major maintenance list, or a local match for infrastructure projects. We're also interested in a fuel trigger for state agencies to assist with the high cost of fuel here in Kodiak, and our villages are really struggling with this. But I really wanted to thank you for your time and your service, and we're sending you our best from Kodiak.
Okay, thank you very much. Now we'll go up to Haynes, Douglas Olrud.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Douglas Olrud, and as mayor, I represent the Haynes Borough today in my testimony. Thank you for accommodating my testimony and schedule today. If you are not familiar with the Haynes Borough LUTAC Dock Rehabilitation Project, we received a $20 million federal raise grant, which is dependent on our securing a 20% match. The borough has put $2.4 million towards this long-awaited overhaul of our dock, which is crumbling into Lynn Canal with holes in the concrete decking. All of the fuel and freight for Haynes comes across the dock. A roll-on, roll-off ramp owned by Alaska Marine Lines operates at one end of the dock, but still requires the dock to be repaired for barges and ships to be secured while loading and unloading. The borough is asking the state for $3.2 million to complete our match for this shovel-ready project. We're anxious to move this project forward before even more damage can be done by weather events and age. The Haynes Borough appreciates your support for this request, and thanks again for accommodating my testimony.
Okay. Thank you very much for your testimony. We're down to Ketchikan. I have a brand.
Yes, sir.
Put yourself on the record, please, and make your testimony present.
I'm Iva Brand. I live in Ketchikan, and I am a volunteer caregiver. I help several seniors and elders throughout doing different things for them. If their regular caregiver has to be out of town, I go in and I fill in. And I do this as a volunteer basically because I care. Now, paid caregivers are needed drastically, but the pay doesn't make it worth it for a lot of them. I have friends and myself that have quit jobs to take care of a family member. I grew up taking care of my grandparents, and I took care of my mother and my stepfather, and I did it all without pay. And I feel that the ballot measure 162 really needs to be pushed through. And I say this from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate every one of my seniors and my elders that I take care of. And thank you for your time. And thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony, Iva. We're going to now jump into the room for a few minutes and go back onto the list. Beth Walton. Yes. Don't be shy, or your 2 minutes will be gone.
I'm never shy. Hi, I'm Beth Weldon. I'm the mayor of the city and borough of Juneau, and I brought with me today Katie Kester, our director of public works and finance. Thank you, Chair Stedman and Chair Bishop, as well as members of the finance committee, for the opportunity to testify today on the capital budget. And thank you for contemplating a capital budget to further the economic interests of Alaska. We certainly need to focus on economic development right now in the state. So I brought today three projects that the city and borough are looking at for capital needs to bring to your attention. First, the state's North State Office Building parking lot is in serious disrepair. A replacement of this failing structure would not only provide parking for the state, but the legislature, and also open up surface lots in that district. And right now, if you're not aware, we're trying to revitalize the Ock Village district, including a Capital Civic Center and possibly one of our places that we're putting a new city hall. So Juneau is ready to work on this project and partner with the state on a new structure. Second, Juneau continues to work with DOT on the second North Channel crossing, or the second crossing as we call it. This project will open up municipal and tribal lands. Much of these lands could be available for housing, which people know is a serious need in Juneau. And this project is an excellent candidate for federal funding, and we're that is being provided under infrastructure bills. So any help you could give on that project, we'd appreciate. And last but not least is our Capital Civic Center. This project is we're renovating Centennial Hall, and this will facilitate the visitor industry, arts and culture center, and also gatherings. Many of you get to appreciate that building in the start of the session when you come down for a legislative reception. The cruise ship industry is very interested in this project, has already allowed $10 million of the marine passenger fees to go to this project. Many of our private citizens have stepped forward, and at this total right now, they've raised about $7 million towards this project. So a contribution by the state would help us with federal and private monies. So that's my
Madam
list.
Mayor, Madam Mayor, you're out of time.
Yep, that's my list, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Okay, thank you. Next up, Tim Peterson here in the room.
Thank you, Chairman Stedman. Nice to see you again. I am here representing myself, but I'm also representing the American College of Emergency Physicians. I've been an emergency physician in Juneau for 32 years.
Okay, could you tell us who you are first?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Tim Quigley Peterson, yeah. So I've been at the ER in Juneau for 32 years. I've also been working for the last 15 years as medical director for the fire department here. So I've got some perspective on that, and I'm here to talk about the WAMI program. We have learned a lot, actually, from our paramedic churn in Juneau about how to retain people. And we've learned if we take people who are from here and we know their work ethic, they're more likely to come back here and stay, as opposed to people that come from down south and spend a couple of years and their spouse doesn't like the weather and so on and so forth. I would make the same analogy for WAMI. The WAMI program is that five-state consortium for four of us that don't have a medical school that has made the University of Washington the number one primary care school in the country. Doctors with all the debt are forced to go into these high-paying specialties. And this has brought a lot of primary care doctors back to the state of Alaska. We have several here in town right now working in family medicine. So I'm here to advocate for the continuation of the program. Thank you for doing that in the past. But also to ask if you would consider, I know there's a request out there to add some more slots. The population is getting older. Medicine is getting more complicated. And anything we can do to help keep our Alaska kids home, I think would be super awesome. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And I think we have added five to the budget this year, and we would have most likely added more, but I think the WAMI program can't handle it too fast of an increase, so we're going in that direction.
Thank you for that.
Yep. Next up in the room, Dan Haberger. You've been here a few times. Sorry I butchered your name, but if I'm here for another 20 years, maybe I'll start getting the reoccurring names down.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Don Haberger, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Juneau Reentry Coalition as their coalition coordinator. And for the record, to be clear, it is reentry from incarceration back to each of our communities, specifically for Juneau. Our mission is to promote public safety within the community by identifying and implementing strategies that increase the success of all justice-involved individuals and reduces the likelihood of their return to incarceration. There are a couple of items in the budget that our coalition supports, and I'm just advocating for these two items. They are behavioral health treatment and recovery grants to our communities. And there's a second piece to that, that is behavioral health prevention and early intervention. If you're a consumer of national and statewide media, you have likely seen an increase of articles on behavioral health results from the pandemic. Prisons are not immune from that, and the same issues that our communities are seeing community-wide also incur with the incarceration. These two items would help in support in our communities to make sure that after release, they have the behavioral health treatment that is necessary. We would ask that you support the House version of this, and that's the end of my testimony, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Jerry McGoon. You're the only one left in the audience, so you're odd man out, I guess. And then we're going to come back online here after Mr. McCoon's testimony.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jerry McCune. I represent Cordova Fishermen United, and I'm speaking on the request for the city of Cordova for $7.5 million for the South Harbor. Our South Harbor is 40 years old. The life was 30. It's really a dangerous harbor now. We had to get up in the middle of the night, blew 100, and put the boats against the dock to keep it from blowing away with all the boats. So we raised all the money. Cordova raised all the money. I won't go through all the different piles of money. We got the money all ready to go, and then due to COVID, the freight costs, all the costs for everything for the docks went up. So we're short $10 million, and we're requesting 7.5 in the capital to finish. We're shovel ready to go, hoping to finish the project, in a year and a half, and get some life in the South Harbor, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Now we're going to go back up to Cordova, and again, that was the third testimony on the harbor in Cordova, so to speed things up, you may want to just tell us what you support. I think we have the information on Cordova Harbor down by memory. Janet Johnson, please.
Hello, I'm Janet Johnson. I live in Cordova, but I'm not calling about the harbor. I'm actually calling because I'm a caregiver for a 22-year-old, well, actually my daughter, who has multiple disabilities, and I have a lot of trouble finding caregivers. I mean, our family's actually had almost no outside help, and my son has actually been a caregiver for her, but she now has moved to Anchorage, where there's a whole bunch of people that are supposed to be caregivers, you know, that whole pool of people, and we're finding that we found some great ones, and they're seem to be leaving the caregiving field because they've just had so much stress from the COVID and the low pay, and there is I really am calling in support of getting that hazard pay, some wage increases for next year for caregivers. I think that it would retain some people or bring them back and provide caregivers. I mean, right now I don't know if my daughter will even be able to stay in Anchorage without finding more caregivers. So I think this is a critical thing. It's very hard for families to function if their family isn't safe and cared for. So I think this is a critical issue, and when caregivers have kind of fallen off the radar, and yet every family in the state, not just Cordova, could use will need a caregiver at some point. Thank you for letting me call in about this.
Okay, thank you.
So please support the hazard pay for caregivers.
Great, thank you.
The $8 million.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Johnson. Now we'll go to Kodiak, Heather Peterson.
Hi there. My name is Heather Peterson, representing myself, and I live in Kodiak. I've been a caregiver for 5 years. I care for seniors, adults, and children with disabilities also. Caregiving is an essential part of our society, and I can tell you that we are the backbone of nursing homes and assisted living homes. We make minimum wage, and we're almost always overworked both mentally and physically. We perform all duties, feeding, bathing, toileting, dressing, grooming, moving, taking vitals, wound care, just all activities of daily living. Since COVID, we have been so understaffed that doing these tasks properly is impossible in real time. Understaffing results in unintentional abuse and neglect, such as bed sores, infection, malnutrition, falls, isolation, psychological illness, medication errors, and death. The stress that reduces the quality of care of assisted living home residents also wreaks havoc on the physical and mental health of us care providers. Most hazards are psychosocial due to stress from performing mandatory overtime, receiving very little support, and feeling rushed. I would appreciate recognition and representation for this invisible, brutally hardworking group of people. Our wages need to be increased to meet the demands of our jobs. My wages increased from $9.75 an hour to $11.39 an hour over 5 years. I think we can agree this is not a living wage. Harmful understaffing is the result, and this must be addressed. How can you help? Please include the $8 million in funding for hazard pay for home care workers this year. I think it's vital. So thank you, thank you.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Heather. Now we're going to jump up, or actually down to Cordova, down from Kodiak and up from Juneau. David Allison, Mayor of Cordova.
Yeah, hi. My name is David Allison. I'm the mayor of Cordova currently. Obviously, I'm calling in support of the $7.5 million for the harbor project. You've You've heard testimony to that already, so I won't burden you with that. I also like to support fully funding and forward funding the marine highway system, vital to our coastal communities, and a full portion of the state's obligation for school bond debt reimbursement. Appreciate the work that you guys are doing, and thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Well, now I'll go down to Petersburg. Chief James Kerr, Chief of Police in Petersburg, please.
My name is James Kerr. I'm the Chief of Police for the Petersburg Police Department. I want to speak about the community jail funding. Petersburg Police Department currently operates one of the community jails for the state. Current funding from Department of Corrections is only 48% of what it costs to operate the Petersburg Community Jail. Since receiving funding cuts in 2016, the Petersburg community taxpayers have been forced to pay $1,041,697 to operate the state's community jail. Petersburg Police Department only arrests on state charges. Since the implementation of the State of Alaska Pretrial Enforcement Officers, there has been a drastic increase in rearrests and housing of pretrial offenders. Petersburg is not compensated for the increase in pretrial arrests. With the Department of Corrections only providing 48% of funding required to operate Petersburg Community Jail, the other 52% comes from the Petersburg taxpayers. The Department of Corrections Rural Community Jail contracts have specific requirements which are required to be followed. Proper funding should be required since technically providing this service, community jail facilities are an agent of the state. The House Finance Committee observed the rural community jails play in public safety and recommended a $4 million increase. Please show your support and commitment to Alaska's public safety with a $4 million increase to community jail contracts. Because when you look at the logistics involved in Alaska, community jails are a vital and valuable public safety resource for the state of Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Chief. Now up to Cordova, Dennis Zarda, please.
For the record, my name is Dennis Zadra, and I'm here in Cordova. And I won't belabor the points. I'm just calling, asking for the support of the $7.5 million for the South Harbor. I have two vessels down there, and it is in terrible shape, and we could certainly use it. Thank you for the opportunity.
Great. Thank you. We'll go to Juno, Jonathan Estes.
Hi, my name is Jonathan Estes. I'm a care coordinator in Southeast Alaska. My job entails me to periodically help people who are eligible for PCA services, personal care assistance services. None have been available in Juneau the last few times I've helped individuals become eligible for this service. One individual or a couple individuals have simply gone without the services. Others have parents or other family members who have quit their job in order to take care of their adult children. Agencies aren't able to hire and retain people for the amount of money they can afford to pay for this service. And I'm calling in to advocate for an increase in funding, a rebasement of the service, which hasn't been done in my understanding in 8 years. Encourage the Senate to take a look at allowing the department to adjust the rates as, you know, to the level that's needed in order to sustain this valuable program. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll now go to Kristen Carpenter, Cordova.
Good morning. Thanks for giving me a chance to testify. Yeah, I'm Kristen Carpenter, the executive director of the Prince William Sound Economic Development District. And I also would like to support the $7.5 million to help complete the critical harbor rebuild in Cordova. I'll be quick. If you've ever been to Cordova, you've seen how the entire community, wraps around the harbor. It really is the focal point and the lifeblood of our community. We have over 700 vessels in there, and in a community that's often teased for being split 50-50 on community-wide issues, we have voted twice to take on $7 million in debt to contribute to this project. So So the community really is pitching in as well, and we would really appreciate your support. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. We're now going to go to Sitka, Mike Vieira, please. Sitka Economic or Sitka Education Association. Mike, if you can go ahead and put yourself on the record, please.
Thank you, Senator Sedman. My name is Mike Vieira. I'm a career and technical education instructor at Sitka High School and currently serving as the president of the Sitka Education Association. Calling to encourage you to support an increase to the BSA and to inflation-proof the BSA going forward. You're aware there's been a four-year flat funding of the BSA, and according to the Alaska Association of School Business Officials, if you look back and adjust it for inflation, it's been a decline for the past decade in funding to the BSA. We are having trouble retaining and recruiting qualified teachers to Alaska. As you're aware, teachers have no access to Social Security in the state of Alaska. According to an own study, those in Tier 3 of the TERS system, according to a study from Bob Mitchell, Chief Investment Officer in 2019, these teachers only have a 31% chance of success in retirement. And those teachers need access to raises now so that they can invest and have that money grow for as long as possible to have a chance for success in retirement. I had a guest instructor in my class this week from Snohomish, Washington. He informed me, and I confirmed, that the state of Washington legislature gave teachers across the board a 5.5% COLA without being asked for the coming year. If I was to go and teach in Snohomish, Washington, I would get a raise of 40%, 40%. The artificial hold down of wages of teachers in Alaska because of the BSA needs to be addressed to retain a competent and competitive teaching staff across the state of Alaska. In Sitka, we are using all of our property tax to fund education, and I'm afraid for my daughters moving forward, the Sitka High School staff is going to lose probably a third of its staff in the next 3 years, and I don't know where we're going to find these qualified instructors to come up and teach with poor wages and a poor retirement system. So please address the BSA. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Senator Bishop has a question.
Mike, I just want to know, with the flat funding over the years to the BSA, have you seen a decrease in your consumables going into your voc ed programs?
Yes. I mean, I have a metal sign project that I do that I used to make it 16 inches. It's now 12 inches because the price of steel has, you know, doubled in the last couple of years. So we're definitely seeing a reduction in what we can provide.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. We'll go to Jordan. Flory, Ketchikan.
Hi. Hi, my name is Jordan Flory, and I live in Ketchikan, Alaska. Thank you for your time today. I am calling in to emphasize the importance of putting $8 million in the budget for hazard pay for caregivers. I am 26 years old. I've been a caregiver for my whole life informally and nearly 7 years professionally. I've cared for seniors, adults with developmental disabilities, kids and teens with developmental disabilities, and family members. Caregiving is a large part of the backbone of these small Alaskan communities, and that's why it means so much to me. At one point or another, all of us will require care of some sort. I never got into this field to strike it rich. It's a known thing that unless you're a nurse or a doctor, you do not receive adequate pay for the services you provide. It takes a person with a heart of service to gravitate to this field. Over the course of my professional caregiving career, I saw little pay increase. I started off at around $15 an hour to, and prior to switching out of the direct support career, I was up around $19 an hour, and it wasn't anything due to any fault of the agencies. The agencies I've been a part of have been continually trying their hardest to advocate for merit raises. Sorry, this is like kind of, this is an emotional thing. They've been trying their hardest to advocate for merit raises and bonuses and consistent hours. In order to sustain both quality working environment and to sustain quality care. However, the reality is that these agencies are nonprofit and they rely on state funding, donors, fundraisers, and grants, with the majority coming from the state. This leaves little room for caregivers, little room for rewarding caregivers for sacrificing their own mental and physical health and safety, especially over the course of the pandemic.
Jordan, could I get you to finish up, please?
Yeah, for these reasons, even though I am no longer providing direct care professionally, I ask that you please include funding for hazard pay, wage increases for caregivers in the budget this year. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, Jordan. We're going to jump now to Petersburg, Jody Toe.
Good morning. My name is Jody Tao. I'm the finance director of the Petersburg Borough. Thank you for taking the time for public testimony. I'm addressing you today to talk on the State of Alaska operating budget. I first want to say thank you for considering to fully fund the school bond debt reimbursement back to historic levels in the proposed fiscal year 23 budget and for restoring back to full funding for fiscal year 22. The facilities that this vital program helps pay for in Petersburg plays an important role in our community. We hope that this trend will remain consistent for future years and that the state will honor its commitment to education. We also hope that the state will consider fully funding more capital projects in the future with any surplus funds or with the matching grant program. The Petersburg Borough has major school construction projects in the next few years, including replacing our middle school, high school, and voc ed building roofs. Our local aging medical center is also in need of a replacement, and in an island community, this is of vital importance. Assistance from the state for these large projects is also helpful in gaining support from local voters on future bond propositions to get these projects fully funded. To wrap up, I just also want to mention how important community assistance payments and community jail funding are to our borough, and the increase in funding levels helps cover our increased expenses. We appreciate that the state is considering increasing these amounts to communities in Alaska. All the funding that the state provides is vital to our local government operations. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Dow. And now we're going to jump to Gus Davis, Tom Williams, City Administrator.
Hello. Thank you for this opportunity to speak on the capital operating budget. Small cities and communities such as Gus Davis rely on the CAP. It provides significant revenue funding for critical services. The City of Gus Davis City Council supports the Senate Finance Committee's substitute for the operating budget, which, in addition to other important changes, provides increases to the Community Assistance Fund recapitalization by $31.8 million, bringing the fund to $90 million, allowing a $30 million payment in fiscal year 23 and restores full funding to Community Assistance in fiscal year 22 with a supplemental payment of $7.1 million. We emphasize the importance of this funding to small rural cities and communities. Without the increase in these funds, it is likely there will be reduction in service levels for critical programs. In addition to the CAP, the City Council also strongly supports sufficient funding for the Alaska Marine Highway System. The AMHS provides life-sustaining services for communities without a road system to vital services. Without the ferries, people don't have reliable transportation for medical appointments, ability to transport materials and equipment, have food delivered, and provide the provisions necessary to live in rural Alaska. Finally, the City Council would also like to emphasize its support for the state to provide matching funds for capital projects, a program in need of reconstituting that is long overdue. In terms of what to do with the surplus, please consider an increase to the PCE endowment. With the need to shift from fossil fuels for transportation, building heating and household appliances, people are buying more EVs, heat pump systems, and electric appliances. Electricity's use is rising as a result, but many are still dissuaded from electrification due to high electric costs, particularly if they are exceeding their monthly PCE cap. Provision should be made to increase monthly kilowatt-hour cap for PCE coverage. That will require more funding for the PCE program. Thank you for this opportunity.
Hey, Tom, could you just put your name back on the record, please?
Tom Williams. I'm the city administrator for the City of Gus Davis.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. PCE is under discussion. Mr. Dan Carpenter from Cordova.
Commercial fisherman. I'm a commercial fisherman in Cordova. I'm just calling to support the funding for the harbor. I just wanted to say I helped in one wind event kind of straighten out the mess of four different finger floats breaking with boats attached. And I just wanted to emphasize it's not that we just need to spruce the harbor up. It's unsafe, and we're going to end up somebody getting hurt or killed or having a really high liability with some boats ending up on the breakwater. And I just wanted to emphasize the harbor is way past due. And,
okay, thank you. Could you put your name on the record, though? I'm sure your name isn't Commercial Fisherman.
My name's Danny Carpenter.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Kim Phillips from Haines, parents as teachers, if you could put your name on the record, please, in 2 minutes.
Yeah. Okay, my name is Kim Phillips. I work in Haines for Rural Cap. I'm a parents as teachers supervisor and home visitor, and I would first like to thank the funding, be thankful for the funding that we have received in the past and the many of you who value the support of families through our home visiting program for families prenatal through 3 or 5 years in areas where there's not a preschool option. What we do is we bring developmental information to families designed individually for each family. We support families through a strengths-based approach, addressing what we call the five protective factors: parental resilience, concrete support in times of need, social connections, social and emotional competence of children, and knowledge of parenting and child development. We do screening and make referrals for children because we know the earlier we start working on delays, the better the outcome for that child and the child's family. We provide support and encouragement to families and help them understand that what they do with their children every day is important. They need to be intentional in what they do because they are their child's first and most influential teacher. We help them become advocates for their children and realize their child's education is not completely up to the educational system, but very much depends on their role in their child's life. Thank you for letting me speak for a moment, and I can tell you from experience that there is a heart to our home visiting program. We develop trusting relationships with families that does not show up in data or numbers, but home visitors know how critical our visits can be, so we do this with love. And I thank you for your continued support and acknowledging the importance of this work. And this is for the budget with pre-K programs.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your testimony. We're now going to jump into the room. Brenda Stanfill, please. I'm sure, Brenda, you got the drill down after listening to everybody.
Thank you. My name is Brenda Stanfill. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. The network is a membership organization representing domestic violence and sexual assault victim services service agencies across the state. We have them from Barrow to Unalaska. You have heard from many of these victim service programs asking for the state's support of the critical life-saving services for survivors they provide and for the work they do within their communities and regions to bring awareness to these issues. Last year, when it was realized that there was a $6 million gap, you all stepped forward and ensured that the funding was added to the budget so programs did not have to cut services, and the programs were truly grateful along with the communities that they serve. In a recent hearing with the Division of Public Safety, when they presented their budget, you saw a slide presented by Diane Castro, director of CDVSA, showing the next 3 years will be challenging for CDVSA to ensure victim service programs have adequate funding as we wait for the federal VOCA fix to take effect. In anticipation of the shortfall, we had worked with federal representation to request federal funds to assist in ensuring programs did not have to cut services in the next 3 years. We thank the Senate for recognizing the federal funds that have been secured for victim services programs statewide and adding in the multi-year receipt authority in the language. We would like to request that the Senate adjust the current proposed numbers in the general fund area and use the amounts proposed by the House, which is an additional $500,000 in general funds for normal operations and a one-time increment of $500,000 in general funds for utilities. We're anticipating that this next year is going to be really tough with what's happening with the increase in oil prices that directly relates in how they can fund their buildings. As you know, the services the programs provide can be the difference between life and death for a victim. Many times, checking into emergency shelter is the only way a victim and their children can truly be safe. It is important that we ensure the programs can afford qualified staff to assist them and offer a clean and comforting environment for them to live in while they figure out how to go forward with their lives. We thank you for taking the time to hear our request today and for your continued support of services for victims throughout Alaska.
Okay, thank you. The buzzer was going off, so you timed it just perfect. Now we'll jump down to Ketchikan, Mr. Tyrell Retke.
Hi, this is Ty Retke representing the PATH Homeless Shelter in Ketchikan, and I would just like to speak in favor and support of the initiative to create the Alaska Housing Trust. I think that a program like this, especially in our community in Ketchikan, where we're having such shortfalls in the housing inventory, I think a program like this will help to solve that problem. I can tell you from my experience managing the shelter here that a large number of my clients and an increasing number of my clients suffer from homelessness specifically because the inventory of affordable housing is so low here. So we just want to, as the shelter, speak in favor of this initiative. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't see anybody else here online right now, so we're going to stand at ease for a moment. Please. come back on the record from the addies. We have completed our list of call-ins. We're 7 minutes past the deadline. So we're going to go ahead and adjourn the morning meeting, but I'd like to remind the public that's watching, if there's anybody, at 1 o'clock, we'll have more public testimony requested. The areas of geographical areas are Kenai Peninsula and general area around Kenai Peninsula, Anchorage, the Anchorage Bowl area, Matsu, Susitna Valley, and the area all around that. So that's at 1 o'clock today. We are adjourned at 10:08 a.m.